You live from WRER Studios. We now bring you The Defenders Live with our very own Miss Anna Edwards. Let's hear what Miss Anna has to say. So, Anna, take it away.
You're talking so sweet, well, you needn't. You say you won't cheat, well, you needn't. You're tapping your feet, well, you needn't. It's over now, it's over now.
And good afternoon, Richmond. You are listening to The Defenders Live, and I am your host, Anna Edwards, and today is Monday. We come to you as a production of The Defenders for Freedom, Justice, and Equality, and if you would like to learn more, visit our website, www.defenders.org. FJE.org or defendersfje.blogspot.com or defendersliveradio.blogspot.com. And if you want to contact us, the email is defendersfje@hotmail.com. And of course, you can always give us a call at 804-644-5834. So today we are going to talk about a few different things, and I have with me my co-host, Tiamba Wilkerson. Welcome back to the show.
Hi, Richmond.
Okay, now with a little more,
a little more.
Oh,
hi, Richmond.
There we go. All right. A couple of things that we wanted to cover are some of what's happening. In part as a result of it being Black History Month, and so this would be the first show of the year to talk about all things Black history. And one of the things is to sort of reflect on, well, I was going to say Super Bowl, but I don't know that that's specifically Black History Month, although I'm sure and I know that there are milestones involved in football related to Black history.
I'm sure. Yeah. I wouldn't know any of them, but
no,
I'm sure.
No, all right. Well, and then we'll get closer to home and closer to topic. One of the things that's interesting that's happening in Richmond right now is at the Science Museum of Virginia, and that is the exhibition Race, Are We Really So Different? And of course, when you drive down Broad Street now, there are these, you know, four giant mm-hmm. banners
yeah.
With the faces of people who have of seemingly different races. And immediately the purpose is to sort of challenge people to challenge their assumptions about race and what they think it means. And historically, obviously, in the United States, what that has meant for people and the kind of really bizarre piling on of laws, of practices, prejudices, institutional racism, the use of what we consider to be empirical scientific practices, the misuse of those practices to serve a greater or more venal interest, in mm-hmm. point of fact.
Right.
You know, it's interesting when we think about, go back to the days of Jefferson, Thomas Jefferson, and his own interest in science, which was very new, especially in terms of biology.
Okay.
And the fact that one of the things that that evolved in the 100 years, you know, following his own interest in his own statements in his own writing about the fact that he believed that Black people were inherently, you know, lesser on the species right. hierarchy, because of course humans have to be on a
right.
species hierarchy.
Exactly.
And you know, and I, you know, sometimes I laugh at this stuff, but it's not because I don't take it seriously. It's because we have to live with these ironies, and sometimes yes. all you can do is like laugh, because you got to protect yourself from the, you know, the gut ache of the reality of what these things, yeah. what these things have meant to people.
Yeah, and the, I mean, the effects that we still feel with these policies and these ideas today, you know, I mean, they laid the foundation for white supremacy in this country, you know, so
yeah.
we still experience these things. They're right. not like past. You know, we say Thomas Jefferson, but we realize that, you right. know, his ideas still very much impact Ooh. Our lives.
With people constantly referring to, you know, we need to go back to the ideals of our founding fathers.
Right, exactly. You know, some of us, that's pretty scary.
Yeah.
Like, that's yeah. kind of, yeah. it's a little scary.
It is a little scary. And, you know, and we know that when we talk about what people are dealing with now, one of the things that I was at the program last Thursday when Michael Blakey mm-hmm. was a presenter. Mm-hmm. It was hosted at the Science Museum. And Dr. Blakey, for those of you who don't know, is a National Endowment for the Humanities professor at the College of William and Mary, and he founded the Institute for Historical Biology. And he was invited by the Future of Richmond's Past group to be a presenter for their community conversation, and that was on Thursday, February 2nd. It was at 6 p.m., and it was... his presentation was related to race the topic was race, and it was essentially the development of race. He specializes in biological anthropology, biohistory, skeletal biology in North America and the African diaspora. He is an expert on African burial grounds, working on the interface between human biology and culture, and that's the piece right there, that we have scientists now who can examine the data. They can even examine the older data, mm-hmm. and they can examine the framework for any experiments or any theories that were being developed, and they can mm-hmm. look at the evidence that was presented. And reanalyze it and demonstrate how it was very much of its time and very much right. to serve a specific purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that it comes out of that too is again we will say this term white supremacy, and what does that mean?
Right.
And of course, for a lot of people, that's a tremendously offensive term.
Right.
It's not just a statement of a framework that existed and does exist for a lot of people still. It's also a term that is very frightening to people because, mm-hmm. you know, thinking, conscious, progressive, humane people
right.
know that a track like that leads in bad directions, mm-hmm. right? And so what we do when we use that term is to remind ourselves that it is something that we still have to deal with,
mm-hmm.
that it has been in place for a very long time.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's important to, as we talk about the history of Black people in this country, it's also important to acknowledge the damage that white supremacy has done across the board in this
right,
country.
Right, exactly. Like, none of us have escaped it.
Right.
You know, none of us... I know exactly what you're saying whenever I have conversations with people, particularly white people, and you bring up the term white supremacist, they immediately think of the Klan. They immediately right. think of skinheads. And they don't, you know, like, no, this is a system. It, you know, it's something that we all yeah. have internalized.
Right.
It's something that we all live in. And it doesn't necessarily make you a bad person.
Right.
But, you know, you have to recognize, you know, the framework in which you live, the social
yeah,
constructs
yeah,
in which
yeah,
you live
yeah.
if you, you know, plan or if you really want to change them. You have to recognize them and own that.
That's right. I mean, that's really true. And it is more complicated for everybody, as you say. It isn't just, you know, that I'm a Black person and it means one thing for me, and mm-hmm. a white person, it means one thing for them. The fact is that our histories now are so interlinked and our experiences are so interlinked that it's far more complicated than that. It affects mm-hmm. Discussions about the history of labor.
Right.
It affects the history of medicine.
Mm-hmm.
It affects, you know, almost any sort of path that you want to follow in the progress that has been made in the United States, there are all these pieces in there.
Mm-hmm.
But one very interesting dynamic now is the issue of, say, Planned Parenthood.
Oh.
Planned Parenthood is under tremendous attack,
yes,
right? And Planned Parenthood is one of those organizations that provides low-cost and affordable gynecological care for women,
yes,
right, and
yes,
and young women,
women's health, yeah,
women's health, and they are under tremendous attack because specifically because of the abortion issue,
right,
and so there's a lot of rallying around it, and I know that when I was a young woman, I used them for my health care services when I was in college, and so I don't understand it, but then you go back and there's this original history of Planned Parenthood,
exactly,
and
exactly,
how does that mess it up, right?
Exactly, right, right. And I mean, but I think what is important in when you talk about that kind of thing is to recognize it, like
exactly,
it's to own it and say, yeah, yes, this happened, this is why it happened, right, but we are committed as an organization that is committed to women's health, all women's health, that we are actively working to make sure that we don't repeat history,
right,
that we don't continue to make those same mistakes. And that, I mean, essentially that's all you can do. You can't change the past.
You cannot.
You know, you just own it and recognize, you know, for recognize it for what it is. Don't deny it. And, you know.
Yeah, I mean, and, you know, one of the issues with Planned Parenthood was that early on it was involved in, I'm not sure if it was sterilization, but it was involved in encouraging.
Yeah, the eugenics movement.
Yeah, there you go. Okay.
Right.
So, you know, the eugenics movement is something that we are going to end up talking about, I think, in a very direct way and over a number of shows. And that's because I sometimes want to say it was born here in Virginia.
Right.
Now, I don't think it was born here in Virginia,
right,
but you know, the boogeyman of the eugenics movement, who inspired the final solution of Nazi Germany, who produced documentation that helped South Africa codify its apartheid system in the 20th century. This contributed to the paper genocide of American Indians in Virginia to start with, and you know, I don't know, you know, the influence of that on outside of the state, drawing a division between black Virginians who ended up being intermarried and becoming American Indian themselves, and those American Indians who intermarried and ended up appearing to be white. And there's a whole dynamic that, this idea of purity versus non-purity,
right,
and the way that that has percolated into a really kind of contaminating mindset throughout all of our contemporary cultures. We're in a real serious period of recovery. We're not anywhere near there, and I think that's why some efforts at reconciliation, some projects that say that we are all about reconciliation, miss a step.
Right.
They miss a step.
Right.
And I've seen it in some organizations that are about reconciliation, and they have a lot of, different peoples who come together and they want to make this thing work. And then after a while, the people of color start dropping out.
Right. Right.
And nobody understands why,
right,
because we're all trying to get along. But this is some visceral, long-standing stuff that really does have to be faced, absolutely. It has to be faced.
Mm-hmm.
It has to be acknowledged. It is going to be painful.
Right.
You know, my stomach hurts, a lot of times when I'm here talking about it and there's nobody else in the room to,
Right.
to judge me.
Right. Right.
But it's, this is the work of our generation, all of us who are alive right now, and who are concerned about these things, and whose either work or interest, takes you to these conversations and to these places, we have to be there. We have to be very present and do it. And we're not all going to be good at it.
No. Well, yes. I mean, and even I think it's important even I know for myself, as a person of color, as a woman, as someone from a working class background, to recognize my privileges in certain situations. Mm-hmm. And I think that's kind of difficult for everyone to do, you know, because nobody really wants to recognize that they, like, you know, like I said earlier, that we are all a part of it and we all live in it. We all internalize it.
Right.
And so that work is hard. And you're not always good at it. But I think the important thing to remember, and just like with Planned Parenthood, is mm-hmm. to know that and to own it. And to, you know, not to say that you continue to make the same mistakes over and over again, but to acknowledge your mistakes and, you know, don't make excuses for it and actively work to change the behaviors.
Right. Yeah, that's right. I'm going to take a moment to let our listeners know that they are listening to The Defenders Live here on WRIR 97.3. It's Richmond's radio for the rest of us. And you can tune in at WRIR.org, where we are live streamed on Mondays from 12 to 12:30, and it repeats on Tuesdays, I believe, at 11 and 2 p.m. So we better make these shows interesting, huh?
Right.
So if you want to learn more about the Defenders, it's defendersfje.org. And of course, you can send us an email at defendersfje@hotmail.com. I'm talking today. Tiamba Wilkerson and I are having a chat about race, about the exhibit that's at the Science Museum, mm-hmm. about this, you know, this horrible term, white supremacy, mm-hmm. about Planned Parenthood, about challenging ourselves to face these conversations and face these issues head on. I'll take that as my own transition to mention that these Future of Richmond's Past community conversations are totally and completely open to the public. They are free of charge, and you would to learn where and when these are taking place, you want to go to the Future of Richmond's Past website, and you can learn all about the whole intention of that, the formation of that group of cultural organizations in Richmond. And it includes most of the historical museums and sites mm-hmm. in the area. It includes three universities. It's University of Richmond, Virginia Commonwealth University, and Virginia Union University. And all these people are working together. They were brought together to work on coordinated programming, or at least, you know, some of it's collaborative, some of it is simply coordinated in terms of topic and timing and things like that, but mm-hmm. in essence, referencing the sesquicentennial, the 150-year mm-hmm. anniversary of the Civil War and emancipation.
Right.
And they have, coming up is the annual Civil War and Emancipation Day. This year, it's taking place on Saturday, April 14th.
Okay.
And it's the day when all of these institutions will be open with programming and speakers, and there will be shuttle buses that will take you from one place to another. I think there's a very nominal charge for the bus ride. It may have been $5. It may be something like that. I'm not okay. sure. But in any event, it's an opportunity for people to get a one-day introduction to sort of these institutions and their approaches to sharing Richmond history and Virginia history, mm-hmm. In particular around that time period. So I think it's a day to take advantage of,
right.
And to bring your criticisms too, as well as your, you know, open eyes mm-hmm. and open ears.
And you said April 14th?
It is April 14th.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. And I won't forget that because that's my sister's birthday. So.
Okay, good.
That's a good one. In addition to that, there are other opportunities for people to be engaged in conversations like this and in issues like this. And of course, one of the ones that we've been involved in for 10 years is Richmond's African Burial Ground.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure in the cold weather if people are meeting regularly, but there was always this standing. Once there was grass on the site rather
right.
than pavement,
right.
there is a Sunday afternoon gathering from right. 4 to 6. And it's really an open kind of gathering that where people can just come and pay their respects to the ancestors mm-hmm. and stop and, you know, meditate.
Right, and take it in.
Yeah. And mm-hmm. one of the things I liked about it during the warmer weather was to see all these people in their lawn chairs and their blankets and stuff, and they were just hanging mm-hmm. out on the edges. Nobody sort of really wants to go out into the middle, and I think right. that has to do with what we still don't know. You know, about that place and the respect that we want to show, especially since it hasn't been there for 200 years. And right. now we have this opportunity to tread lightly, and we want to. But the people were, you know, like that. It was like people on the front porch. It was like, it's like, you know, people in the backyard, and they're just right. talking to each other or just being together.
Community building.
That's it.
Right.
That's it. Yeah. And without, you know, having, not forming an organization right. per se, just being a part of those who want to make that connection.
Right.
And that's a nice thing. So that's available to us now.
Yes.
We didn't have that before.
No, we didn't.
When Janine Bell was quoted in the film Meet Me in the Bottom, she said, you know, can't we have one place
right.
that's for us?
Yeah.
In the middle of all that wow. commemorates, you know, the Confederacy and other histories,
right.
can you just have one place? And so we have this place.
You saying that just like hit me, and I hadn't really thought about it in that way, but you're so right. That is true.
Yeah.
You know, particularly for people in my age range and younger, you know,
right.
I don't ever remember a place or a spot where.
And you're accustomed to it.
Exactly, where, you know, African-Americans in Richmond could go and, you know.
Just be.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, I sometimes have to remember, you know, I don't have to remember why it was important to do. That's not it. But,
mm-hmm.
you know, my life is just as chaotic and busy as it's ever been. And mm-hmm. I don't always get there. But knowing that it's there is very important.
Mm-hmm.
Knowing that it's always there for us is very important.
Right.
And so on that note, actually, what I wanted to bring attention to is the fact that my understanding is that the next charrette in reference to the Slave Trail Commission's development of the whole Shaco Heritage Trail, the Trail of Enslaved Africans, the 17 really wonderful historic markers that mm-hmm. are in place now for people who want to do a self-guided tour, and the park that sits on Lumpkin's Jail site as it's waiting for what is going to happen to it.
Right.
But, you know, whether it's a museum or some kind of site of conscience that is connected, you know, to contemporary technology so that we can do genealogy research or just find out, you know, about our history here in Richmond, and referencing slavery specifically, that being the vehicle for learning the history.
Mm-hmm.
That next charrette, I understand, is to be on February 18th, but I haven't seen any more information about that.
Okay.
So I call on everyone to check that out, to see if you have if you found out, you know, some information. This is where, again, I'm owning up to the fact that I've just been, you know, up to my eyeballs, and
right.
so it would be nice, you know, for my listeners to give us a call and tell me if they have tapped into when that. A public charrette is going to take place. It's our mm-hmm. opportunity. It's, you know, one of our opportunities, or especially early in the game,
mm-hmm.
To be able to have some input into what is being developed or what is being thought about.
Right.
It's very, very early in the game, and whether or not it turns into a museum building, and there's some discussion about whether that's actually viable in terms of long-term,
right.
you know, sustainability, or whether we're talking about. Maybe something a little bit new in terms, you know, this is a stretched out site. If we're talking about from the Manchester docks.
Right. yes.
And, you know, it includes the Mayo Bridge and the flood wall mm-hmm. and the walk through the woods and
right.
and through that part of Shaco Bottom where we know was the sort of main focus of the slave trading mm-hmm. activity, but then there's all the supporting businesses and all the other, you know, histories that evolved out of those things.
Mm-hmm.
And then coming to Lumpkin's Jail, which is, you know, such a crucible
right.
of, you know, what it meant to be a slave trader and to be a traded human being.
Right.
And then across Broad Street, then to have this place of commemoration and a memorial
mm-hmm.
For our ancestors who were buried there, and to the struggle
to what that site has been for those this past 200 years as well. It's never just one thing. And this museum or complex or, you know, site is not going to be just one thing, one experience or one history, you know. So it's I'm looking forward to that. So I, again, encourage people to let us know if they know more than we do.
Right.
About what's going on. Right. Well, I know we've probably only got about two more minutes, somewhere in that range. And so I want to mention one other thing that's happening this week, which I'm very excited about. Call it nepotistic if you like. I don't care. But my stepmother is a poet. Her name is Jane Cortez, and she is she's published, I think, at least 8 books of poetry over the last 30, 40 years, and she's a really powerful poet that deals with, you know, cultural issues, women's issues, war, anti-imperialism, you know, socialism, but really vibrant, cultural, powerful poetry. She doesn't mince words, or when she does mince words, you don't forget.
Right.
She's mincing. And one of my favorite pieces, that there are a lot of them, but one of my favorite pieces is Find Your Own Voice and Use It. And that's in a recent, compilation publication, in the last 3, 4, 5 years. And anyway, she is going to be performing at the College of William and Mary at the Muscarel Museum this Thursday night at, I'm not sure what time. So anyway, we have to go to the William and Mary website, the Muscarel Museum, and she will be there performing. And her accompanist is going to be her son, Denardo Coleman. He's a drummer, and his father is Ornette Coleman, who is a significant. He won one of the MacArthur Genius Awards about 15 or 20 years ago, and is a real mover in the jazz movement. In particular, created a thing called harmelotics, and some people would say there was this whole discordant freeform jazz movement, and he was one of the leaders in that movement. And so very interesting. And to the combination of that drumming and music with the poetry it's a real performance and very dynamic. And so I, check it out. And if you go, I'd like to hear what you think.
Okay. What time is it?
Thursday. I believe it's at 7.
Okay.
7 p.m. So from Richmond, you got to leave an hour early and get on out there. But I think for today, we're good. There's more coming up, and we will be talking to you next week about what else is happening, and looking forward to a program that we're going to do here specifically about the red-black struggle.
Right.
And that'll be a one-hour show, and we're planning on that, and we will keep you posted. I think it's going to be about 2 weeks, so we'll give you the details. Yay. Very shortly, because it's a call-in, and we want you to call in.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks, Tiamba, for joining me today.
Thank you for having me.
All right. And we'll see you in 2 weeks.
Yes.
Yes. Excellent. And I want to thank everyone for tuning in to Defenders Live today. And remember to keep up the struggle, and that kindness does matter. And we will talk to you soon. Thanks.
You're talking so sweet, well, you needn't. You say you won't cheat, well, you needn't. You're tapping your feet, well, you needn't. It's over now, it's over now.